Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud.
Where justice is denied, where poverty is enforced, where ignorance prevails, and where any one class is made to feel that society is an organized conspiracy to oppress, rob, and degrade them, neither persons nor property will be safe. And that was a quote from Frederick Douglass, who was one of my favorite statesmen, because he believed that if you could not read, you would forever be a slave. And he was so correct. This, you are listening to The Prism of America's Education with Karen Schoen. Did you get a chance to see any of Bill Barr's interview with Mark Levin? I listened to the whole thing and I found the whole thing very interesting. He pinpointed Marxism and told exactly of its destruction and what it was doing, and that was terrific. But in the whole hour interview, when Mark Levin asked him how was this happening, he only said once that systemic racism is taught in school. And to me, well, that's the whole nine yards, because school is the lowest common denominator. It is the glue that holds Americans together, because every American in some way, shape, or form has touched a K through 12 entity of government indoctrination. Before we go any further, I want to clarify something that I said last week about our founders. Our founders were not monitored by an IQ test. What happened was the materials at that time were made in comparison to the materials going forward that we see today. So what were they reading in the 1600s, in the 1700s, in the 1800s? What were they doing? What type of math? I used to laugh when my grandfather said, I didn't finish high school. And my father said, I only had a high school education. Well, if you take a look at education today, then you will find that their education was probably even more superior than the education of what is going on in college. The information that I'm going to share with you next comes from the National Center for Educational Statistics and the National Association for Educational Statistics. One acronym is NCES and the other is NAEP. You will find in 2016, the United States spent $13,600 per full-time equivalent student on elementary school and secondary education. That was 39% higher than the average of Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, which has a membership of, I think, 29 or 30 countries. They spent on an average of $9,800. And for that pleasure, has America improved? I think that's something that we should take a look at. So I went back and I did some research on those websites. And I found some of the things I already knew, but we can't find anymore. In 1967, which was the year that I started teaching, America was in the top 10 worldwide with a score of 543 in English and 516 in math. Now, these were intelligence type tests. They were SATs and those kind of achievement tests that were given at that time. The problem is that as we have advanced, more data points are being used for analytical reasons, and it's kind of hard to make general comparisons, especially when the standards are being lowered. So when you take a look at the older tests, I would suggest that you duck-duck-go and find out the civics test or the citizenship test in the early 1900s and see if you could pass it. You would be shocked. And you would also not be shocked to find out that your child has no clue. Anyway, getting back to the scores, in 2004, America had dropped down to 508 in English and 518, well, that was staying the same, in math. The evaluation in 2015 was done using a test on the PISA, which is the Program for International Student Assessment, and America went to 497 in English and 470 in math. Please understand these are a conglomeration of different tests, but the high is 1,000. So nowhere has America ever moved out of the middle. Basically, our education has remained flat as we have experimented on our kids with a variety of failures. And today, after spending 39% more on our education, America's students' average IQ is 98. America is 27th in the world. 47% of the kids that graduate high school can't read and write and do simple math. 47%! That is horrible. That is atrocious. But let's look at some of the things that made that happen. In 1962 and in 2014, secular humanism became the religion that was practiced in the schools. Now, what is secular humanism? That is with regard in particular to the belief that the human is capable of morality, being able to self-govern themselves. They do not need to have God, and they do not need a force to tell them what to do. So basically, what these kids in the street that are destroying everything and what the talking heads believe is that they have the ability to control themselves. Well, that would be very nice if they would, but unfortunately, they don't. And that's why the violence is so acceptable to so many people. Arne Duncan, who was President Obama's education czar, who the superintendent in the failed Chicago schools. I don't believe anyone in the Chicago school, not one school, was able to pass the bar for math or English. But what did Obama say? He said, same thing. America used to be number one in the world in college competition, and that was just one generation ago. Sadly, today we have dropped to number 12 among young adults, and that's unacceptable. Well, we agree, Arne, but what did you do? You implemented Race to the Top, which was a bribe to the cash-strapped states to take your communist Common Core as a national standard. It's at this point I want to stop and add something important. We have to remember that everything is connected. Nothing is random. There are no consequences for your actions. Everything is planned, and every plan is based on lies. Now, as we go through what I'm telling you, you will understand how that applies. So, in order to understand Common Core, let's take a look at some of the people who are on the assessment committee. Sandra Stotsky was to assess the English. What did she say? Stotsky points out how the Common Core was developed by a task force and how the tests themselves are being crafted behind closed doors because of the pressure from the Gates Foundation and the U.S. Department of Education, which threatened to withhold Race to the Top grants from any state which did not promise to adopt these standards. Now, These standards, she said, teach the child to be mediocre. Remember that. Professor James Milgram analyzed the math, and he was from Stanford. He said he was selected to validate Common Core math. The core math standards are written to reflect very low expectations. Students will need remediation in college and will be about 2 years behind. So how did we go from the top 10 to 27th in such a short period of time? Well, we have to go back and look at some of the things that happened in the 19th and 20th century. I'm going to focus on the 20th century right now. And we're going to start off with a booklet, or actually it was a report, from the Carnegie Institute in 1934 and the American Historical Association. This was their investigation of replacing history and civics with the new form of what they called social studies in the schools. And I highlighted a couple of parts that I thought was quite interesting in this report. And one of them says, prospects of the American people as part of the Western culture will now be merging into a world order. Got that? So the new world order was not new. In section 3, we find out that the commission is modifying its traditional faith in economic individualism and is embarking on vast experiments in social planning and control, which call for large-scale cooperation on the part of the people. Now, what does that mean? That means that the kids are not being taught anything with the economy, and that they are experimenting with these programs on our kids. Item number 4 says, in the prosecution of its work, the commission has made extensive use of the scientific method in compiling, analyzing, and organizing materials bearing on the purpose and objective existing and proposed curricula, method of teaching, examination purposes, teacher training, administration functions, and public relations. What does that mean? It means that science and the scientific method and all of those 400 data points are going to be applied to every aspect of teaching, monitoring the child so that they will be able to come up with the, quote, or I would say, the communist core, which we now see in our schools. In number 5, it says that the commission has employed the same method in examining American society and its trends, the nature of social sciences and their functions in education and in the systems of social thought, now bidding for consideration and adoption by the nation and the schools. And what they are telling you here is they will be in control of your child's thought and your child's thought process. And no more of this think outside the box mentality, because your child is going to be put in the box. So what really happens? The elimination of history and civics, well, they were separate courses, but now they were merged into social studies, so they didn't have to be really taught, because the emphasis was on the social behavior and those changes that were necessary to complete the mission of the world order. So BLM and the 1619 Project is nothing more than the same old race-infused hatred of America through lies and propaganda. And if we go back to the 60s, we had the same groups. We had the Black Panthers and we had Weather Underground. The Weather Underground, remember I said everything is connected? The Weather Underground was sponsored, and the head of the Weather Underground was Bill Ayers and his lovely wife, Bernadine Dorn. Where did they go? in our American history. Well, fast forward a little bit. Bill Ayers was the BFF of Barack Obama, and he became a professor in the University of Chicago. His lovely wife, Bernadine, Dorn the terrorist, the other terrorist, who created all of the terror that went on in the 60s. They bombed, they looted, they murdered, they didn't care, and hence we now have BLM. In 1946, a Canadian psychiatrist and World War II General Brock Grissom was a doctor, and he became the head of the World Health Organization, WHO, and he promoted the behavioral modification process now mandated through Goals 2000. And Goals 2000 morphed into today's mastery learning and the planned control of the family, all done through outcome-based education. Remember that name, Goals 2000. Fast forward to 1951. In a report entitled The Greatest Subversive Plot in History, Representative John T. Wood of Idaho stated in the Congressional Record on Thursday, October 18, 1951, just how careless and unthinking can we be that we permit this band of spies and traitors to exist another day in this land we love? Are there no limits to our callousness and neglect of palatable and evident treason stalking rampantly throughout our land, warping the minds and imaginations of even our little children to the lying propaganda and palatable untruths we allow them to be fed through this monstrous poison? The UNESCO scheme to pervert public education appears in a series of 9 volumes entitled Toward World Understanding, which presumes to instruct elementary and kindergarten grade teachers in the fine art of preparing our youngsters for a day when their first loyalty will be to the world government. I got a picture from a friend of mine from an elementary school in Palm Beach County, and on the marquee it said, "We teach our students to become world citizens." To continue, this program is quite specific. Pictures, phrases, words, diagrams, maps, classroom material, or teaching methods of any sort causing their pupil to feel or express a particular love or loyalty to the United States of America is forbidden. Forbidden. And this was in the 50s. Children exhibiting such prejudices as a result of prior home influences of which UNESCO calls the outgrowth of the narrow family spirit are to be dealt an abundant measure of counter-propaganda at the earliest possible age. Booklet 5 on page 9 advises the teacher that the kindergarten or infant school has a significant part to play in the child's education. Not only can it correct many of the errors of home training, but it can also prepare the child for membership in the world society. Do you get the picture? Are you seeing the plan? Do you see what it's based on? Education is big business. It has nothing to do with educating the child. It only has to do with money, power, and control. And you're listening to Karen Schoen with the Prism of America's Education, brought to you on the America Out Loud radio network. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. This is not a fight of Republican versus Democrat. It's not a fight of rich versus poor, old versus young, man versus woman, gay versus straight. It's not a fight of black lives, blue lives, Hispanic lives, or white lives. This is a battle of good versus evil. It's a fight for the soul of humanity. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. While we took a break, I had the opportunity to go through the 45 goals of communism again. And what I discovered, I want to read to you something because it makes what's happening, I believe, crystal clear. And that would be goal 22, which says, continue discrediting American culture by degrading all forms of artistic expression. An American communist cell was told to eliminate all good sculptures from parks and buildings and substitute meaningless art forms. 23 says control art, critics, and directors of art museums. Our plan is to promote ugliness and repulsive, meaningless art. And the last one, I guess, is my least favorite of all because it says belittle all forms of American culture and discourage the teaching of American history on the grounds that it was only a minor part of the big picture. Give more emphasis to the Russian culture. What do we see happening today? This is exactly what's going on. Unfortunately, I don't know if these kids know why they're doing it. But I want to also read you a quote from Ben Franklin. There is scarce a king in 100 who would not, if he could, follow the examples of Pharaoh. First, get all the people's money. Now think about Joe Biden and the taxes. Then all their land. There goes the new Green Deal. And then make them and their children servants forever. Give them free stuff. I am apprehensive that the government of states may, in the future times, end up in a monarchy. When we talk about history, folks, there is one person who, to me, is my guru of history. He is an incredible author, researcher, and has brought to light so many things that are happening in the past that we must be aware of for today. So, Bill Federer, I would like to know from you why you think history is being erased.
Right. Well, it's a communist tactic called deconstruction, where you separate a people from their past, get them into a neutral position where they do not remember where they came from, and then you brainwash them into the future you have planned for them. It's a sales technique. So if I was a toothpaste salesman, the first thing I do is tell you negative things about the toothpaste you are currently using. You're still brushing with that old stuff? Don't you know it'll eat the enamel off your teeth? You're like, ooh, and you're repulsed by it. Now I got you into a neutral. You're open-minded. What are all the toothpastes out there? Then I give you my pitch for this brand new tartar-controlled breath freshener stuff. So that's what they do. They go into the classrooms and they tell the kids negative things about the founding fathers. Howard Zinn's A People's History of the United States, the founding fathers were all slave owners and took land from Indians, and ooh, the students are repulsed by them. Now you got the kids into a neutral. They're open-minded. What are all the belief systems out there? Then you give them your pitch for socialism or LGBT or Islam. And Europe went through this. It went from a Judeo-Christian Europe with Catholic cathedrals, Protestant Reformation, and Jewish neighborhoods to a secular, neutral Europe with the French Revolution, free sex, anything goes. And now it's turning into a socialist Islamic Europe with Mohammed being the number one name for newborns and no-go zones. And so we see this taking out of history and putting in a new identity. It's sort of gene replacement therapy for a culture.
It's really the same thing going on over and over again. It just has a new name.
Right. So the old ones were Islam. Whenever Islam would come into a country, it would destroy the libraries, the museums, the artwork. I mean, the oldest library in the world used to be in Alexandria, Egypt, and Caliph Umar's warriors went in there and asked him what they should do with all these books that went back to Abraham's day, just thousands. And he said, every book that does not agree with the Quran, destroy. And every book that does agree with the Quran is redundant because we have the Quran, so destroy them all. And so this concept was you destroy the history and the identity, and then you put in a new identity, a new history. Communists did the same thing. So in the 3rd century BC, you had the warring states period in China, and half dozen kingdoms are fighting. One wins, and it's led by Qin Shi Huangdi. And he is doing things differently than they had been done before, and he's criticized for it. And so he got tired of being criticized, so he decided to destroy all the records of how things were done before. And so they rounded up thousands and thousands of books and parchments and everything and burnt them. And he said, anybody caught with the classics of history shall be tattooed and sent to build the Great Wall of China. And so Mao Zedong modeled himself after this. So in the 1950s, he had his cultural revolution where Mao Zedong destroyed 5,000 years of Chinese culture and so that he could usher the young people into the People's Republic, this brand new thing. Pol Pot did the same thing in Cambodia. He made 1975 the new year zero, said everything prior to that was irrelevant, and he killed anybody that wore glasses. He said if you wore glasses, you could read. If you read, you knew the history, and he wanted to destroy the history. Why? Because he wanted to do something new. And so this is the concept. You destroy the history.
Isn't that the same thing that's happening with this new 1619 project where they're trying to change when America was founded and why?
Yes, it's exactly it. It's the same thing with tearing down the statues, defacing these different, and it's not just Confederates, it's anybody that's American and anybody that's Christian, the whole Judeo-Christian. To sum the Judeo-Christian Western civilization view, if I could sum it up in one word, it's individual. All of Western civilization empowers the individual. You have rights as an individual, not because you're a part of a group. You are made in the image of God. You can decide where you want to live, who you want to marry, what career you want to pursue. It empowers the individual. All other belief systems, especially socialism and Islam, it's a group thing. That you only have rights and identity with this group. And this group always has a leader, a gang leader. And if you benefit the group, you rise up in worth. And if you challenge the group, you are diminished in worth and you're eventually killed or ostracized. This is why it's important for us to decide that we want to maintain our Judeo-Christian Western civilization.
Oh, absolutely. Otherwise, we have exactly what you said, which is groupthink. And when that happens, the destiny, your destiny is predetermined. That's what's going on right now. And that's what's going on in schools as they're tearing down our whole entire belief system. Wasn't George Washington, when he became president, didn't they ask him to first become a king?
Right. So our founders were breaking away from the most powerful king in world history. One of my books, it's called Who is the King in America? I do an overview of world history. And the most common form of government is a king. They go by different names, Pharaoh, Caesar, Kaiser, Sultan, Tsar. And as the centuries go on, the kingdoms get bigger because with military advancements, you can kill more people. So instead of killing with a rock, you kill with a bronze weapon or an iron weapon or a big long phalanx spear or a scimitar sword or a bow, you know, composite bow or gunpowder. The weapon changes, but it's that same fallen nature, a Cain, Kill, and Abel. But ultimately, the King of England had the biggest empire on the planet. Sun never set on the British Empire. America's founders broke away and flipped it. After our country was away, we had different you know, the Whiskey Rebellion. We had, you know, some of the soldiers hadn't gotten paid in years. And there was the Newburg conspiracy of, you know, wanting to march into the capital of New York City at the time and, you know, take over the government. And so Washington could have easily been king. And yet he goes into this Newburg conspiracy, pulls out a note out of his pocket. He puts on glasses. Nobody had seen him wear glasses before. And he says, "Excuse me while I put on these spectacles. I've grown blind in the service of my country." And then he goes on to read. He says, "We've done this amazing thing, breaking away. And if we give in to this movement to have our military march in and take control of the government," he said, "we'll have wasted all the lives of all of our friends that fought in battle, and we'll just go back to the way it was before." He folds up the note, puts it in his pocket. There's not a dry eye in the place, and the Newburg conspiracy disbands. Washington could have said, "Okay, guys, I'm with you. Let's go in and make me king." No. And so when King George III was having his portrait painted by an artist named Benjamin West, he's making conversation, and he says, "Well, what does this Washington plan on doing now that he has defeated the king's army?" Benjamin West says, "Well, the rumor is that he's going to go back to his farm." The king stops and says, "If he does that, he truly will be the greatest man in the world." You see, from the beginning of time, kings killed to get power, kings killed to keep power. Washington had the power, and he gave it up and went back to his farm.
Okay, now the 1619 Project is based on the concept that America was created because of slavery. That's not true.
No, it's actually the opposite. So every country in the world has had slavery. Chinese would enslave people. The, you know, Japanese would enslave people. The Romans enslaved. As a matter of fact, the word slave comes from the word Slav, and it was the name of a people group in Eastern Europe. Yugoslav, Czechoslav, Slovenia, and the Romans captured so many of them and brought them into Rome as permanent servants that their very people group name got the connotation of a permanent servant. And so we pronounce Slav slave. That's where it came from. But Islam had slavery. Muslims enslaved an estimated 180 million Africans, and it still goes on today, sadly. And so the idea is America has gotten rid of slavery. We actually had hundreds of thousands of Union soldiers giving their lives to free slaves. And so we got rid of it. Whereas, and then other countries followed suit, or they changed the name of slavery to, you know, indentured servitude or sex trafficking or, you know, the generational indebtedness. They changed the name, but it's effectively still slavery. But America got rid of it.
And that's never, ever mentioned. Not mentioned in either the new BLM curricula or in the new 1619 curricula. What your children are reading and what their anger is coming about right now is because they're reading this about America, but only through a very narrow lens that only pinpoints one small aspect of slavery, which we all agree is a horrible thing.
Right. So actually what it is, it's a software problem, not a hardware problem. The software problem was Democrats versus Republicans. Democrats had slavery in the South. Lincoln was a Republican, and he issued the Emancipation Proclamation. Did you know Tuskegee Institute compiled a list of over 4,000 actual documented lynchings? Did you know 1,000 of those were white Republicans who were down in the South registering the freed blacks to vote, and the Democrats lynched them? So here it's not white versus black, it was Democrat versus Republican.
Nothing has changed. How many years is that? And we're still doing the same thing. Only now what's happened is enter the media, enter Hollywood, enter technology, and it makes it harder and harder for the truth to come out, which is why everybody should read your wonderful books, which can be found on the American Minute, and sign up for Bill's emails. They're fantastic. People have to change their allegiance from being free to saying it's okay to be enslaved. It's okay to be a servant.
From the beginning of time, when people felt insecure, they gave up freedom. So the first invention ever was the plow. Even the Bible says Cain was a tiller of the soil. And then people started hitting each other with them, and they turned into weapons. And then people felt insecure, and they gave up some of their freedom, and they gravitated off their farm together to form the first cities. And so when you get people together, someone's a little better at knowing how to fight and defend than the rest. And everyone says, hey, you be our captain. And you fight, you win. That's a good thing. And then this captain has kids and grandkids who claim to be an elite class, a special family, a political mob. Before you know it, you're back to a king. And everyone wants to kiss up to this family and whoever happens to be at the top of the family. And if you're not supporting them, you're ostracized and kicked out or killed. And so you're back. So in times of people feeling insecure is when they give up freedoms. This repeats itself throughout history. Plato talks about it. I wanted to focus on one spot. After World War II, you had Britain, France, England give independence to their former colonies. And it was a perfect world. They got brand new countries with brand new leaders, except for the Soviet Union decides it wants to export its communism. And so it sends KGB agents into these brand new countries, Czechoslovakia, Romania, Poland, Hungary, Romania. And they find groups of people that have grievances. Maybe they're on the bottom end of the economic spectrum, or they have racial grievances or ethnicity differences or religious differences. And they organize them into the haves and the have-nots, the victims and the oppressors. And then they organize protests and riots, and then they get violent, and then they co-opt the media with bribes and threats to blame the new leader of these countries. And then they cultivate weak links in the military. And when the country gets panicky and confused enough, they do a coup or a rigged election. They replace the leader with a Soviet puppet, and the dust settles. People realize they just gave up their brand new free country, and now they're controlled by this totalitarian dictatorship. This concept is you look for people with grievances that you can stir up, divide and conquer.
Bill, I always learn so much from you. It's such a pleasure having you on. Bill Federer, please go to his website, AmericanMinute.com, and sign up and get his emails. I certainly hope that Bill helped you to connect the dots, because I believe that if you know the plan, if you know the process, and you can see the pattern in history, you'll be prepared for the present. You will have enough confidence to step outside groupthink, to not be involved in deconstruction, and you will be prepared for the present. It is so important that you can present an opposing point of view, questioning in a non-emotional message. You are the individual. You have the power. It depends now on what we do with that power. We are living through the exported communism now today called globalism. Remember, every time we get on to what they are doing, they change the name. The process itself never changes. They could not find people with grievances, because when people understood what America was really all about and learned the power of the individual, there were no grievances because you were in control. Therefore, it was chosen that race must be the weapon, because race is visual and you can't do anything about it. Race then becomes the weapon of choice. And make no mistake, race baiting is big business. If you know your history, you won't be forced to repeat it. And also remember, they do not care about you. They could care less who you are. Unimportant. To them, everything is connected. Everything has a plan. Nothing is random. And all plans are based on lies. You're listening to Karen Schoen with The Prism of America's Education. Be right back.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
We have just been talking about the goals that the communists have been using that were read into the congressional record in 1963. There are a couple of goals that I want to focus on right now, and one of them I'm going to read to you. It's goal number 27, and it says, infiltrate the churches and replace revealed religion with social religion, discredit the Bible, and emphasize the need for intellectual maturity, which does not need a religious cult. Number 28 says, eliminate prayer or any phase of religious expression in the schools on the grounds that it violates the principle of separation of church and state. When that happened, as we know, when you take something away, you have to replace it with something else. And religion got replaced with secular humanism, which is based on a theory called nihilism. And nihilism is the rejection of all religious and moral principles in the belief that life is meaningless. So this is what our kids are learning. I've asked Pastor Rick to come on the show today in hopes that he can explain. Pastor Rick, what is going on with the children? Do you think that the removal of God and the introduction of nihilism has a reflection of our children today?
Well, the short answer is yes, and the long answer is yes, and every answer is yes. Of course, whenever you see something like this going on, then you have to be very alert to realize what is going on and what is going to be the longer-term consequence. Because it isn't just about the consequence on the children that are in school today. It's about the consequence that started when the children were in school in the 60s when all of this began. Because those children grew up to be parents. And little by little, all of this gets diluted. And pretty soon, kids are left in a vacuum, not knowing which way to turn, what to believe, or even if there is anything they can believe in. So yes, it's a very serious thing, and all parents need to pay attention to it.
I believe that these children are the ones that we're seeing doing the demonstrations, because it appears to me that the life is meaningless part is definitely when we talk about abortion. They talk about abortion as though there is no life. Do you agree?
Well, there certainly is life, and people do talk about abortion as though it's just a mass of cells, it's not a person, and they go through great efforts to define when life begins and all of that. I think it's quite simple that life begins when life is conceived. And the Bible's pretty clear about that, that God has seen us even before we could be seen. And that's where life is, and that's when it begins. And that gives us a foundation upon which to begin to value life, because the Bible also teaches us that people, human beings, are created in the image of God, and we bear that image from the moment of conception, and it matters to God because He formed us in a special way.
You're so right. And one of the things that is not being taught anymore is, of course, that our rights come from God, our Creator. So where do you think these children today think that their rights come from? If there is no God, where do rights come from? Any idea?
Well, increasingly, we're seeing evidence that a lot of people talk about the rights coming from government. And they say that the government gives us this right or that right or the other right. We steadfastly affirm that our rights come from God. They are inalienable. It's just like the founders wrote in the Declaration of Independence. And we affirm that over and over. When rights come from God, then no one can take them away. And we profoundly believe that our rights come from God, and it is not the role of government to take them away or to give them back to us. The role of government is to preserve the rights that the Creator gave people. And that's their primary focus, preserve the rights that God has given to all people.
Well, we have to remember, folks, when rights are given by government, government is made up of man, and whatever man gives, man can take away. And that's why it's so important that our children understand, first of all, that I don't even know if they know what their rights are, because they are not discussed anymore. But the fact that the government grants them their rights makes them, in effect, worship the government. Do you think that's what's happening?
Well, nobody would say they worship the government, but there does seem to be a rather remarkable confidence that government can do no wrong. And I think the government has a role in a free society. We just talked about that. Its role is to preserve the rights of the people. But government isn't an entity unto itself that simply treats us the way it wants to treat us. Government, as Abraham Lincoln said, in our understanding, is by the people, for the people, and of the people. And so we need to be involved in that, and we need to recognize that what the government is doing, it's doing on our behalf because we've asked them to, in a manner of speaking, asked them to, and we need to pay attention, be involved, and bring correction when correction is necessary. And I think that a lot of people have this idea that government is out there beyond their reach, hardly accessible by them, almost incomprehensible to them. And we need to bring it down to the people to say that people in government are men and women like us, and we need to expect them to do the right thing, the thing that the law requires, preserve the rights of the people. That's just as simple and as direct and as profound as you can get.
The other thing that they continually say is that there is supposed to be a separation of church and state. That's not written anywhere in our Constitution, and yet it keeps on coming up all the time. Pastor Rick, do you think that a pastor or a minister or clergy should be involved in politics and should be talking about politics from the pulpit?
Well, the simple way to think about that is to ask a question. Does God care about any of these things? And we who are ministers are supposed to care about the things that God cares about. And I can't find anything that affects people that God does not care about. Part of the problem is we've allowed people who want to diminish the role of the church and of pastors and of God-fearing people in public life of our country, and they've tried to reduce it by calling everything political. And they've said to us, well, that's political, stay away. And even sometimes in the walls of our churches, people will say, if it's political, we shouldn't touch it. Well, I take a little different view of that. All of these issues are moral. They come down to questions of right and wrong. Every time a senator or a member of the House of Representatives votes on an issue, they vote yes or no. They are either saying, yes, this is right, or no, this is wrong. That's a profoundly moral decision. So yes, pastors need to reframe all of this in terms of moral choices and of right and wrong, and help people make good decisions and sort out truth from error, right from wrong. That foundationally is a role of the clergy, always has been, always should be, hopefully always will be.
You're absolutely right, and this is where I believe our clergy is falling down. The problem that they are doing, and if you look at the Federalist Papers, our founders never believed that there should be a religion of the United States. That was not their idea. Their idea was that any person would be able to be free to worship the God of their choice. And as a result of that, there should be no God in government. But there certainly is no reason for there not to be government discussions in church. And that has been flipped around, and that has been erroneously reported, as they continually state that separation of church and state, when there really is no separation, because I believe that the teachings of God is what gave America our morality. It helped us and assisted us. When we believe that there is a higher power that we have to answer to, it keeps us and it keeps our moral fiber along a positive course. What our kids are being taught right now is that life has no meaning. It's meaningless. You're there for the time that you're there, and that's it. And if you snuff out a life, it's like snuffing out something using a video game. The only problem that these kids have not learned is that there is no reset button, and that when you kill somebody, they actually do bleed. But this is a problem that we have in America. What would you suggest that we can do in our schools?
Well, I think we can always advocate for a return to basic fundamental moral values and encourage our schools to stand behind those. Now, I don't think we want our schools to be taking the place of the church. I have not heard anybody advocate for that. But I think we do need to have an honest conversation and help the schools realize that we want you to teach something substantive. We want our kids to understand right from wrong, and we expect that to be practiced during the course of a school day. The other reality is this. That is going to be a continually difficult challenge, and now probably more than ever, and I don't think too many of us came to this conclusion lightly, but now more than ever, parents who care about what their children are exposed to should seriously consider finding alternate means to educate their children. The schools are going to be put in an increasingly difficult position. They're going to have to navigate between those of us who believe in right and wrong and those that do not. And when it's a public institution, they're going to have a hard time pleasing everybody. In fact, it's impossible to please everybody. So that's why we think parents ought to have a choice, and parents ought to seriously look at alternatives to education. Can I find a way to educate my children that ensures that not only are they protected from these terrible philosophies and terrible ideas, but that they are preserved and introduced to that which is the truth so that they can understand life as it really is and was meant to be?
I could not agree more. Very well said. You, Pastor Rick, as always, I appreciate your input.
Well, always glad to help out. Thanks for the opportunity.
Okay, everyone, get out those pads and pens because we are at the to-do part of the show. I hope everyone is now comfortable in understanding the patterns that we see because the patterns obviously repeat themselves. But as I say, knowledge is only power when you apply it. And that's what we have to do now is apply that knowledge. We have to remember that the people that we are talking to think that we are evil. We are cruel. We are full of hate. And we want to do everything we can to destroy their lives. And therefore, they want to destroy us. And this is the propaganda that they have learned in school. They have learned that America is a racist country full of hate. And that our documents, especially our Constitution, was written to promote slavery, never to end it. Remember that history is cyclical. How many times have you heard that? It comes in cycles. Yes, it does. And remember what Bill said. He said the first cycle is pain and poverty. The second cycle is productivity and patriotism. The third cycle, the country prospers. And then they drop into promiscuity, which is where we are today. In the 45 goals of communism, you will find that promiscuity is one of the goals being promoted. Why promote promiscuity? Because it takes people's attention away from their real goals, which is money, power, and control. The other day, I started watching the reruns of Law and Order, and I like to do that because we can go back in time and you can see what the political flavor was during that time. At the end of the show, they always have the elevator dialogue, which is really what this is all about. So the questions that were asked were like this. When they were describing the perpetrator, they said, "This was just a young man full of rage and hate looking for a target." And then it was asked, "Isn't that what the definition of a terrorist is?" And the answer was, "That's not the scary part. The scary part was how easy it was to create one." And this is what we see today as we look at the terror monsters that our kids have become as they destroy the American cities. What we also have to understand is they don't care what they destroy. Their mission is to destroy, period. That is their programming. That is what they have been taught. And that is what the lies and propaganda leaves them with. Their target is America and Americans. And they don't care. They will hate, they will take down, they will burn the flag, they will destroy statues, anything to destroy. The sad part is they mostly destroy the businesses in their own communities. And it's funny, well, it's not funny, it's actually sad, because aren't these the same communities that the candidates go out and say that they want to protect? They want to protect the minority communities as they watch them burn. Nothing was worse than seeing that CNN clip where the reporter was talking about peaceful demonstrations as the city was burning behind him. Constitution Day, which should be Constitution Year, is celebrated in September. When discussing the Constitution with your kids, go over the Bill of Rights. Ask them, if there is no God, where do your rights come from? You will be shocked when they have no answer. Ask them what they feel about the Constitution, and they will tell you it is a living, breathing document full of rage and hate. At that point, I stop them and I ask them, imagine we are football players, and everybody got their playbook. Everybody read their playbook. Everybody was prepared. They went out on the field. The quarterback started calling plays, and everybody did something different. How would that work? That is impossible. The Constitution is America's playbook, and that is what guarantees that we all have the same rights, and those rights cannot be changed just because of a group preference. That's why President Trump continually gets into trouble and is constantly called a racist, because he doesn't separate and say, I'm going to go out and help the black people. He said, I'm going to uplift the minorities. This is a huge undertaking, I understand. But if America is worth saving, who will save it if not Americans? Thank you all for listening. See you again next week. This is Karen Schoen with the Prism of America's Education, brought to you on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network, Saturday and Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. Eastern. See you again next week. But I'll always stand proud and free. I'm America, don't tread on me.